in the basement. Just as much as you can take in. 12th of December. Just as much as you can take in.
Hey there, this is WGXC, rocking here in Hudson, and we're at 90.7 FM, ACRA, Catskill, Hudson, Greene and Columbia Counties, New York, broadcasting locally on 90.7 FM and globally online at WGXC.org. Right now, you're listening to The Art of the Hudson Valley, and I'm your host, Chad Weckler. And I just first want to thank Alan Skerrick for playing a lovely two-hour set of terrific jazz. It's always nice to drive into Hudson and listen to Alan's selections for that day. Today, in fact. Just want to make a special note. Thank you to all the contributions made during our recent pledge drive. And I mean contributions by the volunteers who helped make it happen and also our community for making the financial donations, and we are fortunate to have met our goal for the pledge. Thank you, everybody, for making that happen. So today we're in the Hudson studio, and I have two local guests with me. I have Andrew Nelson, who's a graphic designer, music DJ, artist, and he is the creator of the newsletter Upstate's Downtown. Also, Jessica Puglisi. She also goes by Jess. Everybody knows her locally as the manager of Spotty Dog Books and Ale. She's a graphic designer, and she curates the music and literary events at Spotty Dog. So I just want to also mention that the song we played at the top, that was from a band called Cuddle Magic, and that song was called Content and Contempt. And the reason why I played that, they will be playing at Spotty Dog this Sunday, November 6th. And since we're talking Spotty Dog, welcome, Jessica, to the studio.
Thank you.
Give us a little background about your role at Spotty Dog.
Okay. It's evolved. I've worked there for almost 6 years now. It will be 6 years in February. And basically, it has evolved from being a bookstore with ale to something more than that, I guess.
Good.
Sort of a micro venue of sorts. And so in addition to, you know, doing books and art supplies fully and during the day, in the evening we're kind of a full-fledged bar almost at this point in terms of crowd. And we have frequent music events, like usually twice a week at this point, sometimes more or less. And a lot of literary events, or not a lot, proportionally less literary events, but we'd like to have them as well.
Who was playing last night?
Last night, we actually had the local noise drone experimental band, Summer Mummy, which is comprised of a few local musicians who also play solo and in different configurations, and also a kind of a noise duo from Ontario, Canada, called Fossils. And so that was our inaugural garage show, actually, that took place in the garage instead of in the main space. So that was fun, kind of a light crowd, but a nice show nonetheless, if you like dissonant noise.
Well, I think people do.
Yeah, plenty of people do, in fact. Yeah.
I think I was, when I came by yesterday about 6:15, the place was already full of local people ready to drink beer, read books, and listen to music.
Yeah. In different proportions, but yeah, definitely. Yeah.
And we'll switch over to an introduction of Andrew, who was not only getting out the weekly newsletter moments ago, Upstate's Downtown, which we'll talk more about, but he's also getting ready for a show at the Jay Damiani Gallery, which has its opening this Saturday. Is that correct, Andrew?
Yeah, that's right. 4 to 7 on Saturday afternoon. It's kind of a celebration of a number of things, actually. I mean, Hudson is the kind of the theme throughout all the pieces. It's a series of graphic illustrations of buildings and scenes around Hudson, and they kind of all started from the newsletter as a way to present our weekly header. I was doing illustrations and trying to take snapshots of the buildings and businesses around town. The focus of the newsletter in itself is to promote events and things going on in Hudson, and it's presented as part of the Hudson Business Coalition, which has a goal of promoting business within town. So in a year's time, I've kind of accumulated a number of interesting images. I think they're interesting.
Yeah.
Colorful nonetheless, and Joan took a liking to them and asked me to come down to a gallery and hang some. So it would be my debut gallery show.
Wonderful.
And I was both nervous and and excited about it at the same time. It's good stuff. So yeah, we'll be having some libations and snacks. I think Maude is providing some things to chew on and we're going to have open house from 4 to 7 on Saturday, so come down.
How old is the newsletter at this point?
We will be celebrating our one-year anniversary on December the 2nd, which last year launched as a full-page newsletter for everything that was happening on Winter Walk, which this year lands on the 3rd of December. So it's kind of exciting going into 1 year of a successful run, a solid growth. For those of you who don't know about the newsletter, it's a email newsletter that kind of is fully at my discretion. I kind of pick the things that I think that are interesting around town, many of Jessica's events land there, doing some fantastic stuff over there. And I just pick 3 to 4 different things that are happening in town and kind of put them out there for people that want to know what's happening. And it's, you know, it started very humbly, you know, 40, 50 people that were close friend invites, and has blossomed into, I think we now have readership as far as Buffalo, and people in New York and Brooklyn are subscribing, and every week we get people passing them on, and it's quite nice.
And I think probably full disclosure, both Andrew and I serve on the Hudson Business Coalition Executive Committee, so we see each other at minimum once a month. And when the newsletter started, I thought that it was a great way to profile, highlighting some of the things, which there are many things that happen here in Hudson. It's just with the few things of blogs that we have here in the city, and musical events and galleries, often it's very hard to, in a way, you're curating the newsletter and giving sort of a your take on it. But I'm sure businesses come to you who want to advertise.
Yeah, well, see, that's the cool part about it, is that it's not just, I mean, there's a number of places in town that, you know, Alan Thurston does an incredible job posting everything from business meetings and civic events all the way through to, you know, music and shows and things like that. But we kind of take it a step further and add that bit of advertising and colorful images and things like that. It takes it a step beyond the raw information. And we try to find colorful things that people can present from their businesses, like sales, special deals and things that can only be gotten through the newsletter. Last week we gave tickets away for a show at Helsinki. You know, just something that makes it a little bit more. And like you said, yeah, it is me curating. It's my own personal take on Hudson, I suppose.
And going back to Spotty Dog, Spotty Dog has had sort of an evolution of being an art store and then also being a bookstore. Mm-hmm. And when did the musical aspects come in?
I guess it really started in an informal capacity probably about maybe 4 or 5 years now. Not too long after I started working there, but we started having just, you know, solo acoustic guitar impromptu performance, you know, on a Friday night or something like that. Jeremy Kelly would often play there, and then it sort of evolved from there. You know, maybe a friend was coming through town who was a musician and asked about spaces, and we're like, oh, we could have a very, like, informal show, not even really amplified or anything like that. And then, you know, we really started doing, bringing a lot of local people who were just interested in having, you know, there were, you know, a few years ago, 5 years ago, there weren't so many spaces as there are at this point to play music. In Hudson, there was no Helsinki, like Basilico wasn't really going, no Cannonball Factory, whatever, you know, that, you know, faded. But, yeah, so it was just to fill a gap, basically, you know, informal, you know, DIY performances for whomever was willing. And then from there, you know, more interest grew. There were more people who were, like, visibly trying to do music. And I guess it just kind of came from there. So about, like, 2007 or 8, we were really doing something sort of regular that incorporated people from both within the community and who were passing through the community, like, in a formal sort of, like, the programming that we do now, which is generally speaking, a local artist and then somebody on tour put together that have some sort of connection, and, you know, however tenuous, and then, you know, that's what our show formula is at this point. And I think that probably started around, yeah, like 2008, so about 3 years now, I guess, of very consistent.
Well, both of you would correct me if I'm wrong, but let's say at that point, was it basically Spotty Dog and Jason's that was offering live music at that point?
It may have actually been Stray Bar at that point.
Yeah, I'm not sure
But yeah, it's pretty much at that time. Mm-hmm. I mean, Red Dot has done DJ events. Mm-hmm. They may have been doing their open mic on Wednesday.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they do now, yes.
It's a couple years old now.
Right, yeah. But other than that, no other formal venues.
Yeah.
Well, what in the world happened? Why is it now we have many more venues for music?
I think it comes down to demand.
I think that the population has shifted in a way where there are a lot more active musician types and just general artists who are working and looking to exhibit than there were a few years ago. And so they're filling in niches that didn't seem to even exist at that point. I don't know.
Well, Jess, are musicians coming to you, or do you have an opportunity to go out and scout? And
it's both. I mean, at this point in time, I don't really have to do much, and like people just come. At this point, I feel like there's almost too much demand. You know, we still are a bookstore. We certainly sell books all day long, and that's, you know, basically how the business is structured as a retail venue with, you know, add-ons. But so at this point, there are officially more people who want to play there than we can really accommodate all of the time. So it's a real, and so obviously I ask people if I'm interested in their music and, you know, want to get them in. But at this point, a lot of it is just trying to honor the requests of people who want to play, who either are somehow affiliated with Hudson or, you know, something that seems like it's going to fit there. I'll try to get them in, but sometimes it's hard.
Well, being a DJ, Andrew, what are some of the monikers that you have? You don't have just one moniker.
My current stage name, if you will, is Mr. Chips. In the past, I have gone from everything from the Beatnik to Mr. X to one time friends called me Seltzer, which go figure. I don't know what that was about, but it's. You know, being a DJ is a performance. It's you get to, it's your alter ego.
Well, does each DJ have in a sense of a musical personality, a kind of music
that they in my definition of a DJ, yes.
Yeah.
Absolutely. What a DJ plays and how he plays it certainly defines them as who they are. I think, you know, Mr. Chips, if you will, has his own take on the dance floor. I very much am a party DJ. But there are DJs who take on several different monikers and will play different styles of music based on that name, which it becomes a challenge at times. You know, there's nights when I want to play straight hip hop stuff from, you know, my roots and do 80s, 90s hip hop stuff. And then the next night I might be in a Sharon Jones dap tone kind of feel and want to play straight soul. And if I have that under the name of Mr. Chips, the two crowds don't always come together in the same place and confusion can happen. So there's a lot of value in a name.
And you've also played as a DJ locally at Mexican Radio on a few occasions?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I get out as much as possible. I mean, I've been DJing informally since 1985, 1986, and started a real professional career, I guess, in college on the radio, and took it to the city when started playing in clubs and took on with a promotion company that I was doing my day job for, and their job was putting on shows. So I was afforded the availability to open up for some really big artists in some rather large venues, and you know, totally thankful for that opportunity.
Are you speaking of your design experience at Giant Step?
Well, yeah. I mean, Giant Step was my introduction to the music industry. It was a complete chance landing. I was at an event and met the right guy at the right time, and they needed somebody, and I became their promotion director, which included their design. But it was, you know, the office was three people, and we were putting on live performances and DJ nights for crowds from anywhere from 300 to 1,200 people, you know, Irving Plaza down to SOBs, kind of small-scale stuff. And my job was to get people in the house. So it went from everything to collecting the raw materials from the artists and getting the word to press, to designing the flyers and actually passing them out every single night. So DJing kind of fell into that. It was, I got to DJ. It was how I met the crowd. It was also a connection to the music. It kept me in the know of what was going on. It kept my interest in the scene. And then, like I said, it got me into those big gates. You know, I would never have been able to play Madison Square Garden if I wasn't somehow attached to that. I don't think I'm that good of a DJ, in my humble opinion. But it happened, and it's really cool.
It seems, I'm guessing, Jess, you also design posters for Spotty Dog musical events.
Yeah.
So you both dabble.
I think it becomes a necessary evil at some point. You know, someone's got to, I don't know, if you're trying to do something, I don't know. That's how it happened for me, basically. Someone had to make them. So
you're doing similar to Andrew. You're booking the bands. You're designing the posters, you're getting the posters printed, you hand them out. Do either of you get a chance to sleep at all?
No. But you get used to 3 hours. It's a strange kind of morning buzz.
Well, what's the for you now, what's the best time of the day? Say, Jess, what's the, you know?
I don't know how to qualify in that. You know, in terms of, how do you mean that?
I maybe creating the time of when you're most
lively. Probably the evening. I don't know when I actually am creating something that is not. I don't know. Probably I would say evenings. I'm a night owl, and so this kind of all fits into the whole thing for me. You know, the having to be up late and at things like shows all of the time isn't the worst. Because I'm inclined towards that naturally anyway, so, yeah.
I'd have to agree with that. Yeah. I mean, the tunnel vision happens when everything's dark around you.
Exactly.
I think it takes a certain personality to really sink into this kind of lifestyle, and most people I know who are into promotion are into 1,000 things. Sitting in at your desk at night with the darkness around you kind of allows you the focus to get all the other distractions out of the way and sink into your art. And for me, the design stuff is an obsession that's come out of the promotion. I don't know if you feel the same way about that, but it's almost a hindrance in some ways. A poster that's too good sometimes comes down, which is the anti-promotion. Which has happened before, which is a compliment to the designer and not good for the show.
Yeah.
So,
well, Andrew, what brought you from the city to Hudson, and when did that take place?
I moved up here. I think it's our 5th year anniversary coming up. I was in the music business 11-12 years, managing labels and artists and night events, and after a while, you know, like you said, the 3 hours of sleep is kind of hard. And I was a little burnt out, and I grew up in a very small town. I'm from Oswego, very similar to Hudson in a lot of respects. And I had a yearning for the trees. I needed to get out, and Hudson had an interesting thing going on with it had energy. You know, I came out for a few nights, and I saw my first punk show down at the Basilica. They had a political punk band that then turned into a literal pie fight. They had tables of pies, and it was the most bizarre and interesting time. And they had an artist in the chapel that was doing pieces on based on the lyrics of Dr. Octagon, who's a rapper who's very explicit and bizarre imagery in his lyrics. I found that really fascinating, that in a small town that there could be that kind of energy and excitement, and it was enough to get me hooked.
And so. I was also, Jessica, looking at the Spotty Dog lineup. You were kind enough to give me the schedule for Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, and listening to the music of all those musicians that are participating, it's not just one genre.
No.
How do you do that?
I mean, again, it comes down at this point in time, there's sort of an embedded community of musicians who have come through. And I'd say, you know, if you start listening over time to all the different music, that there's, like, I'd say not, there's certainly not one genre, but there are obviously some, a few genres we're inclined towards. Yeah, these are, I was thinking about that when I gave you the schedule. This is kind of a good triptych of weird and unassociated music, because on Friday it's, you know, the solo guitar, but not in any way John Fahey, like, you know, very minimal drone. And, you know, has a lot more, I don't know, to do with experimental music, I'd say, than, you know, American primitive guitar or anything like that. And then, you know, sorry, what was the question? I'm just kind of rambling.
Well, Friday night you have Hubble, and it's not night, it's space. And that, of course,
that's a cumbersome name, I know. But
it's interesting.
Yeah, it's a, well, that's the thing. It kind of really plays into their music. They have a very psychedelic, you know, almost sound kind of just like psychedelic metal to me. And they're from New Paltz, and they've actually got in touch with us because they were interested in a lot of the musicians we had coming through. And also basically just bridging that sort of unbridgeable gap, which is the southern part of, like, the Hudson Valley and Hudson and Albany. So I've been looking forward to that for a while.
I'm going to cross my fingers that I've got this right. We've got one of the songs, which is quite long, so unfortunately I'm going to cut it short at some point. But this is from It's Not Night, It's Space, and the name of the song is Soul of Each God.
Indeed.
We'll be right back.
Well, that's It's Not Night, It's Space. That's the band, and that song, or at least that portion, is from Soul of Each God. And thanks, Jess, for that that song. It was great. And we were talking during that break about what else is going on at the Spotty Dog. You're in such a small space, you're actually attempting to enlarge.
Yes, we... well, actually, after we had a local filmmaker film festival, what we called it, the fourth ever Spotty Dog Occasional Film Festival, and roughly aligned with Arts, or was aligned with Arts Walk, but not necessarily entirely affiliated. But regardless, it was very nice, and we had it in the garage because formerly we used to have that upstairs at the Spotty Dog, but since the last time we'd done it, we'd installed offices up there, so it made it impractical to do that. So we decided to clean the garage and have a film festival in there. And after that, you know, it was very successful. We had like 30, 50, I don't know, somewhere in that vicinity amount of people come through. I've had about 15 different filmmakers all over the map in terms of everything about the films. And yeah, everyone was really jazzed on the idea of perhaps using that space for shows, because, you know, again, as I mentioned earlier, we're having more interest in playing music at the Spotty Dog than the Spotty Dog can necessarily support. And so we basically scheduled an off-night show on a Wednesday, kind of by design, the type of music that doesn't necessarily bring people out in droves. But, you know, there's a small and serious audience of the willing.
Yeah.
And so we had this show in the garage last night to see how it would work. And, I mean, I think it worked pretty well. Again, it was a small amount of people, but the acoustics are really nice. We can get probably a few dozen people in there comfortably. I think it's going to get a little cold soon, but definitely looking forward to exploring it. And, I mean, definitely thinking, you know, we keep having impromptu dance parties, so maybe making them less impromptu and more shoved in that space where, you know, you're not like in danger of throwing your beer all over books. But I should emphasize that it's in no way going to become the primary space for shows, only because you're not accessible to the bar. And I don't know if I should even be talking about this on the radio, because I have no idea like what fire codes were in violation of.
But, none at all, as far as I know.
Hopefully not. Yeah. But you know, we ever, I don't know. So yeah, it's exciting though to be, you know, kind of just utilizing every square inch of a space that definitely was intended, not for less than that, but not intended for that in its initial conception. I don't know.
And the books portion of Spotty, how many books would you estimate do you have on
I
stock?
Believe, and, you know, correct me if I, well, you're not going to, but, you know, I think it's about 10,000. I'm not positive. I believe that was like the number that I've had in my head when I have to answer that question to people, but I believe it's around 10,000 books. But yeah.
And is it the only bookstore in Hudson?
Oh no, not at all. We are the only new bookstore on Warren Street. There is Hudson City Books, which does a lot of antiquarian and used books, rare books. And then there's also on Fairview Avenue, Fairview Books, which does both new and used. What I find the most remarkable about that place is their magazine selection. Everybody who comes to the Spotty Dog looking for magazines, we don't have them, but Fairview Books has an amazing selection of magazines, especially for Hudson, so go there.
And
John Doe obviously has some books.
And John Doe has quite a few records for sale too.
Oh, certainly, which we have none of. So
do you have any CDs
no,
available?
We have like one Slink Moss CD from about 7 years ago. And
oh, somebody go in and purchase that right away.
Yeah, exactly.
Slink would appreciate that.
But other than that, no, we barely can handle what we already have. So we're trying not to add, I don't know. I mean, we've, I think, tossed around the idea of maybe offering a small selection of merchandise from bands who have passed through, like maybe buying a couple and then just reselling them, but I think it would be easy to lose track and never reimburse. I don't know. So, yeah, we haven't broached that yet too far.
Well, Andrew, how do, from your experience, how do musicians get their music out and listened to? What are some of the new, besides LPs, and is it now EPs? Electronic play, or?
It's more MP3 than EP, or even LP at that matter. Yeah, and it almost feels like that live music has started to really come back and with force. There was such a shift in the last 10 years or so with the music business and the way that people listen and the way that they purchase music, that there's so much more value to seeing a band live now. Mm-hmm. And it's a way for bands to sell their music, because you can record in so many easier ways now with a higher quality than it used to be in your garage. Hmm. You know, 2-inch tape was a whole other deal compared to a Pro Tool session in your bedroom. So you can have better quality stuff and do a live show and just sell it from there. So there's a lot of these smaller bands who are really getting a foot into it. And the way that they get heard is the interweb. Hmm. And they're Facebook and MySpace, and you know, there's a dozen other social networks that are used for music specifically, and YouTube, and you know, record everything and whore yourself out is really what it comes down to. It's not a pretty business getting yourself seen out there, but in most cases, artists in that field like to be seen, they like to be heard. It's their medium, so. It's a good format.
I mean, just looking at the lineup that you have and seeing where some of these bands are playing, it's like you say, it's not just the Hudson Valley. They'll do a larger circle of a tour. Mm-hmm. How do you? Here's a question for both of you. An answer that I don't know is how do you get in touch? Is there a couple of separate sites to see who's on tour if you kind of wanted to follow a band or discover a band?
There's something Nation.
Reverb Nation
seems to be.
Yeah, I mean, we are listed on a couple of. Yeah, we're listed on Reverb Nation and this other website, Indie on the Move. And, you know, but. Frankly, I actually don't do a very good job, if any job at all, of curating the Spotty Dogs being on those websites. Mostly, I find out who's on tour by going to their own website, whether or not it's Facebook or what have you, or if I happen, which I haven't for many months now, but like I occasionally listen on Last FM, that has a really convenient way of telling you who's on tour and where they're touring. Basically, but most of it, I mean, I feel like from my angle, bands are like pretty proactive, they, you know, about trying to get themselves places. Mm. And like, as you know, the Spotty Dog and Hudson specific, you know, the Spotty Dog is only a place to come because Hudson has become a place to come. And as Hudson rises on the profile as a nice place in between, say, like Boston area and New York, you know, people more and more want to come through here because it's, you know, it breaks up their tour, or, you know, in a lot of different, it's just a nice elbow basically if you're touring like around the Northeast. And so
it's you know, when you talk about promotion in that sense, mm-hmm. you know, there's the way that I would promote one of my shows and the way that Jessica goes about hers has got a different approach, mm-hmm. based on what the content is. Mm-hmm. You know, the communication avenues for electronic music, mm-hmm. goes through an electronic medium. Mm. You know, Hype Machine is where a lot of DJs and things will go to find their new remixes and things like that, which is it's a website. But Jessica's approach doesn't really need that. It's the music is more organic, it's more earthbound, and it's really about who's having coffee with who or who's talking over a beer. And it, you know, the art of the poster, I think, speaks a lot, gets the information out there, and it's what you see on the street. So you really have to know your audience. You have to know who your crowd is and where they hang. And it really, every artist has a different approach based on who their crowd is.
Are both of you knowledgeable about gigposters.com?
Mm-hmm.
I'm not. I shouldn't admit that, but I'm not.
It's just something actually I stumbled onto recently, which I never would have given it that name, a gig poster, but it makes total sense to me. I also like design, even though I'm not a designer, but going back to the 1960s in the San Francisco Bay Area.
Fillmore posters.
Yeah, Fillmore posters were always out there into the public all the time, and that was the way for people on the street, not necessarily to listen on the radio, because radio was more commercial, and certainly around here in Hudson, there are a few locations where posters are posted, and it's almost in many ways the only way to find out where someone's playing and who's playing where.
And if you think about the time when those posters were active in San Francisco, half the population that went to those shows were living in the park. So, I mean, that's, again, it's the medium of how people are communicating. And, gig posters, I've been following them for years. And actually, the poster itself is one of my favorite mediums. Mm. And it's kind of where my show is going this weekend. But there's so much to be communicated in a single image. And those posters are very inspirational in the sense that you can just take an image that's eye-catching and draw you into that image and then read, oh, well, it's Jimi Hendrix or whoever playing at the Fillmore. You know, it sometimes needs that art to suck you in to get the information, especially when you're posted on a billboard that's got 30,000 flyers on it. You need to be that one that stands out, and you need to communicate that language to your crowd in the respected language of the band. Mm-hmm. So...
Well, both of you doing graphic design here in Hudson, and Hudson, the city of Hudson, is not a very large city. It's only 6,500, 7,000 people, but there also are a large amount of graphic designers that are here. How does everybody get work?
Beg, borrow, and steal. you kind of just have to make opportunities and... be consistent in your quality and hold on to every client that you've worked for. You know, it's an interesting art form, and I do sincerely believe that graphic design is an art. Mm. I think the traditional approach to art is that you are speaking from yourself and communicating through your medium. Some by guitar, some by paint, some by whatever. For us as graphic designers, we have to take a different approach and communicate someone else's message, and that is where the biggest challenge is. You have to sit back and say, okay, well, I've got this noise band, we have to get our crowd in to see that, and we need to represent the band in a light that makes sense to them. So you're mixing messages and trying to amalgamate everything into one thing, and it can be challenging, especially when, you know, being creative 24/7. I mean, that you can wake up some mornings and go, yeah. I don't even know where to start. Yeah, you know. So,
and Jess, you work with Alan Kuhn Design as part of the Spotty Dog, and it's so hard to even see Alan anymore since he seems to be very, very busy. Not only is a with family, but on design. Mm-hmm. What are some of the projects that you're working on currently?
Well, his work, I'm in a funny position, because my work for the Spotty Dog is entirely separate from my work with Alan, and then separate again from the work I do on the side for my own people, so clients, if you will. But Alan's work is remarkably unrelated, and the work I do for him is just not related really to the Spotty Dog or Hudson at all. It's a lot of working a lot for corporate clients and kind of pretty dry stuff, which for me, I mean, I'm happy to admit that I am not in any way like formally trained in this stuff. He's like mentored me for a couple of years. And again, my graphic design career, if you could call it that, arose from a need, which was that we were having shows and somebody needed to make posters. And it started, you know, literally as, you know, I've always been inclined to collage things and make very small, non-serious, you know, collages and things like that. And so it evolved in that way. And then, you know, also simultaneously, I'm comfortable with computers. And so all of, you know, that's where my entry to graphic design and then, you know, working with Alan happened. But yeah, so most of his clients, I can't give you very many examples because they're not particularly interesting. I'm not sure like how much wants to broadcast, but most of them are just like large corporate like consulting firms, banks and things like that, and you know, occasionally a local oriented project. But yeah,
I would say from my personal observation, whether it's watching commercials, ads in magazines and newspapers, there is an evolution. I mean, it's very hard for, I think, people, from my opinion, to stay conservative.
Mm-hmm.
You know, whether you're a bank or a lumber store, there's a need as we evolve to keep up with design trends.
Well, yeah, I mean, visual culture overall has become so much less formal. I mean, if you look at ads over the last 50 years, it's no longer columns of text telling you why scientists say that the product is the best, but it rather, you know, some goofy animal wearing the product or something, that, you know, for the same exact product, you know, over time. So I think as like, yeah, just our visual culture becomes less formal and...
And it's strangely a bit more about entertaining, entertainment.
Mm. Yeah, seriously.
You know, people don't want just information anymore. They want to be entertained by their information. And that too can be a challenge if your client is not ready to go there.
Mm-hmm, definitely.
And does it sound like most, let's say, products, even an artist is a product. We should be able to treat just about anything as a product, to publicize it and to promote it.
Mm-hmm.
Even with musicians, besides posters, there's the CD, there's the website, the presence on MySpace or Facebook. Andrew, does your take, what you do, do you dip into those areas too?
In regards to making a...
Let's say when an artist, musician comes to you, or even a label, and they say, Andrew, it's not just the CD cover we want the liner, we want how the,
oh,
the
absolutely.
Disc itself
looks. Yeah, I mean, I'm working on an interesting project right now for Girly Action, a company in the city who is PR and label management, and they are working with Amanda Palmer from Dresden Dolls, and her and Neil Gaiman have put together a tour that they funded through Kickstarter, and as part of the thank you gift for pledging to Kickstarter, they put together this package that's three CDs into a nice folding four-panel gatefold kind of thing with the three CDs of their live show that is being recorded as we speak. I mean, wow. the dates happen between Halloween and I think 3 or 4 days from now. And the packaging was, you know, they had a rough concept and they say, you know, we want to make this look fantastic. What's your take?
It's great.
And it's my favorite part of the whole thing. The whole game of design is really just, how can you make something functional, incredibly fun, not only for the sake of the person who's going to purchase it, but for the process of actually doing it. You know, I need to be entertained in my job. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, it becomes like working at the bank, you know, taking money and putting it in another box, you know. But yeah, there's been some fantastic campaigns in the past that have allowed me to go from soup to nuts.
And what might we see? Just a little taste for your show at John Damiani's gallery.
There's, I think, 13 pieces, and they range. The title of the show is Progress and Transition, which is kind of a celebration of Hudson and its progress through transition, but also a celebration of myself in that same kind of growth that Jessica talked about, coming organically into being a designer and making something into the point of being able to have my own gallery show. The pieces that I've done are, you know, graphic illustrations that I've printed in large format and framed using reclaimed wood from around Hudson. So all the frames I made myself. The prints, I worked with a local design house here that had large format printers, and they gave me a solid and helped me out getting those printed.
Great.
And yeah, the scenery on there is everything from statue of St. Winifred in Promenade Park through to the facade of Helsinki's building. And they're both almost cartoonish and almost photographic, and some are whimsical and some are kind of dark. It's kind of full representation of where Hudson can go and does go, and you know, where it's been.
And speaking of what's coming up soon at the Spotty Dog, Jess, if you don't mind, since I've got the line up here, tomorrow night, November 4th, Hubble, and It's Not Night, It's Space. Saturday, Cokeweed and Trummers, and AGE, which stands for Above Ground Episode. Love those names. And Sunday, Cuddle Magic and Railbird. Mm-hmm. I love how bands and musicians, they come up with names. In some ways, these are kind of tame.
Mm-hmm.
from what I've seen, it's not just the Beatles or the Rolling Stone, although that caused controversy back in the 60s for making those names.
Mm-hmm.
As we kind of get close to the end of our hour, I wanted to sort of ask both of you, you've seen the transition of what's been happening here in Hudson, in the Hudson Valley, with music and design and the arts. Can you maybe guess, make a prediction what we might see in another year, 2 years, possibly a little further down the road? Is that possible?
You want to take a stab at that one?
You beat me to it. sure. Well, not so much a prediction, just as an observation, it seems, and I'm going to keep this specific, kind of specific to Hudson. I've been in the area for about 10 years. And I've been in Hudson for a little more than 5 of those years, I guess 6 of those years. And I mean, specifically, this town seems to, like I said earlier, has been benefiting, or even not benefiting, changing, you know, bringing a lot more. I mean, fundamentally, you know, the migration here started, you know, however many, say 20 years ago, 25 years ago, seems to be the consensus. Then with people who could afford to buy buildings and open businesses and kind of did so, you know, just like homesteading up here, you know, transforming this town from whatever it was, you know, to what it is becoming. And at this point in time, you know, that transition doesn't seem to be stopping at all, and it seems to be accelerating and bringing, in some ways, a more diverse bunch of people to the area, but in other ways, you know, like more of the same. And I see it accelerating at least a little bit more, or just keeping going at this particular rate. And I guess what it's doing, in my opinion, is bringing sort of a young, middle class, sort of post-collegiate, semi-retired populace to the area. And, you know, kind of, I mean, obviously the word I'm dancing around is gentrifying, and rapidly, and it's I don't know, in some ways I'm anxious, because you know, I've liked the scale of this area, you know, in terms of it being a cultural hub in the midst of a rural environment that has still a very, you know, there are still people who have been here for their whole life and many generations who have a great stake in the town and are still visible. And, you know, even though the conflicts arise, you know, it's important. And I don't know, maybe like that will be overwhelmed soon more than it has been.
I think if the city can keep up with it, I think that as far as art is concerned, you know, with venues like the Basilica getting their feet planted and more and more artists coming into town, both musical and visual, you know, that it's only up.
I just, I guess my concern is that it remains as like accessible and boundaryless as I feel it has been in some way. You know, I feel, you know, the Spotty Dog has been like, in my opinion, a pretty open forum. And I think a lot of similar open forums have been, have come into play here in the last few years. And I would hate to see that change. You know, GXC would be another extremely good example of a place that's just open across the board to members of the community. As I don't know. So, yeah, I hope that doesn't change, basically.
And it's just been my observation every time I come into the Spotty Dog, specifically in almost every shop, I see artists working, whether it's behind the counter someplace or up front. We obviously do need more jobs since more people are moving here, and I'm crossing my fingers that those two things come together.
Definitely.
More so. I just want to remind our listeners that this has been the Art of the Hudson Valley, and the guests today have been Andrew Nelson and Jessica Puglisi. I want to definitely thank them for being here.
Thank you.
And I just wanted to put a shout out that if you want to find out anything that's going on in Hudson in the arts, I'm going to push one website, which is artinhudson.org. It will list musical events, gallery openings, and then also always go to the wgxc.org /events. Very informative. And listen to WGXC, read the Register Star, shop local, live local, as we all do. Also, going back to Alan, thanks very much for your 2 hours of music. And I'm going to also thank Tom Rowe, who's been helping this last hour on the board. Couldn't do it without him. And we can't do it without you. Thank you, everybody, listening in. WGXC.org.
Give me liberty or give me death.
WGXC, the station that gives you liberty.
This is Todd Merrill. You're listening to WGXC 90.7 FM, Equip, Catskill, Hudson. Radio, made with radio.